Welcome back to the program. I am delighted to have on the show with us today Dr. Christian Greer, the CEO of the Michigan Science Center. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
It's good to be here.
We can finally get down to some school stuff,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
So some of our listeners might be aware about the new planetarium that has been reopened at the center, but I'd like you to give our listeners a really good sense of the newly dedicated Penske Planetarium at the Science Center and how Penske's foundation's gift really help transform the whole thing, because it is remarkable.
Yes, it's a great question, and it's something we're very excited about. As a matter of fact, when the organization sort of restarted as the Michigan Science Center in 2012, as a new 501c3, it was in debt, lots of challenges, and my board chair, Tom Stevens, reached out to Roger Penske to get some support. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, it's one thing when you have a challenging situation, you're trying to do something that's mission-based, and somebody, when you're down and challenged, comes through for you in a big way, makes all the difference in the world. And here we are now in 2026, being able to dedicate the planetarium by the Penske Foundation is really exciting, because we have this incredible 8K projection system that allows us to be able to show the most incredible scenes from space, and they are all data-driven by NASA data and other research scientists and astrophysicists that collect data. We can project it right on the dome. We have 5.1 sound. We have great new seats. We have a nanoseam dome. It's an exciting time to be in the planetarium world with Penske Planetarium.
I had the good fortune of going to the planetarium soon after it opened with my wife and some of my children. And one of the neatest things is how you actually start like you're in the city of Detroit.
Yes, yes.
And you go from there to wherever. You go a long way, and it really helps you. It's sort of a grounding effect as to where we are and just how vast that is.
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of those things that, you know, perhaps we should have spent more time thinking about deep space and all the renderings that we had to do for that. But that was the one thing we started with. We wanted a really good scene from Detroit to be able to, like, take off from this area, something familiar, and go to places unfamiliar, as far away even with our show, which was called Hyperspace, A Stellar Odyssey, presented by Stellantis. That show allowed us to go to our closest, nearest galaxy, large galaxy in space, like the Milky Way, called Andromeda. And it was just an awesome thing.
And it really is, it feels real life, even though it's tough to conceptualize the I don't know if it's 3 or 4D, whatever the dome is, puts you in a totally different space, no pun intended.
Yeah, absolutely.
then, you know, when I watched film strips as a kid mm-hmm. in elementary school. And I think there's an old saying, timing is everything.
It is.
And as we sit today, Artemis, this space, the lunar mission, is currently on its way back. And I'm curious what opportunity that's provided you at the center, given it launched, I believe, on April 1st. Could you walk our listeners through what that mission is all about and some of the high points of it that you've been able to follow?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as a kid, you mentioned the film strips. I remember doing that, too. I had to load the, I guess it was like the 8mm film strip in there to watch lots of different things. I was born in 1969, not out of the womb yet to be able to see the moon landing in July, but I grew up really fascinated by this idea that you could go up into space. And this is what we're trying to do right now. And this Artemis II mission is so perfect for 2026 with America's 250th. Mm-hmm. You know, as a way to celebrate, you know, the country's ability, capability, daring, innovation, all those things are so exciting. And this mission is the second mission. Now, I had a chance to see Artemis I. I happened to be in Orlando, and while I was getting ready to go to a meeting or something, I saw it on TV, and I'd forgotten that the launch for Artemis I had been delayed because of a hydrogen leak. And they finally launched it on a day that I was down there. I was like, I got to go see this. And so in the middle of the night, I took an Uber all the way from Orlando to Titusville, which was very expensive, but it was 100% worth it. It was my first rocket launch. And to see a moon rocket as the first one, everything else seems sort of basic from here. But it was loud. And I remember when it took off, it was like the plumes of gas coming out of the bottom of the rocket, going up into space, like lit up the night sky. Giant fireball. And I remember someone standing next to me who was like, oh, my God, they did it. So for all of you engineers out there who make things happen. This is them doing it. And doing it in a big way, and it's really exciting. So this mission is really about the human side of it, and a Michigander, who's one of the astronauts, Christina Cook, is responsible as a mission specialist for all of the things that take place associated with life support, including the toilet. So it's an exciting time for us to see them do their thing.
So all of the seventh graders out there who aren't listening right now, because they're probably in school, when you ask that question about geometry or physics, when am I ever going to use this?
This is it.
It's right here.
And apply it to just watching on television is really what having those STEM goggles on and seeing what you can see and learn what you can learn.
You know, someone asked me not long ago, why are they not landing on the moon? And, you know, there was so much success and attention given to the Apollo mission that landed on the moon. Help our listeners understand at least that purpose of the mission was not necessarily to land, but to do other things.
That's correct. And for the Apollo mission, I believe they were listed by letters at the time. So Apollo 11, I believe, was a G mission, and that was the one that they wanted to be able to land at that point. Mm-hmm. And then all subsequent missions were supposed to do other things. You know, the first one, 11, was to land. Apollo 12, they wanted a pinpoint landing. Apollo 13, they were going to do something else. Fra Mauro, another place on the moon. So all these things are sort of like stages, one step, two steps, three steps. Learning about the SLS launch vehicle, the stack that goes up, a little shorter than the Saturn V, but much more powerful and like 15% more power and thrust. But this mission, to me, the landing is scheduled to be Artemis 3 or 4. That is pretty impressive. I mean, we haven't even done a spacewalk yet in the Orion capsule, which is called Integrity. The astronaut crew names that. So that's one thing that I think we'll just have to see how well they can get that. But now with so many simulations that you have and things that you can do with AI, there's a lot that can simulate on the ground. So it makes it a lot easier and safer to be able to handle the astronauts out in space.
One of the most intriguing parts of this mission, and I've been a pretty good student of it since it started, lots of people have an understanding of the space station that's out there. Many of us remember how the space shuttle would orbit the Earth.
Oh, absolutely. So I saw that with my very own eyes go over the sky. Yeah.
And most of those objects orbit somewhere between 100 and 300 miles above the Earth.
Yeah.
How far away is this mission to the moon, roughly?
Well, the average distance to the moon is about 238,000 miles away from the Earth. Meaning it varies because it's not a completely circular orbit. As Einstein sort of predicted in relativity that the orbits would precess and Kepler described them as elliptical. So there's sometimes in which the moon is closer, sometimes further away. You see this during eclipses. In this case, they're greater than 245,000 miles away from the Earth. And this is the furthest that anybody's ever traveled. Apollo 11 went pretty far out while they were there. Apollo 8 as well. Mm-hmm. But Apollo 13 may have been the furthest. And so to be that far out is really interesting. It's considered deep space. It's not deep space like Uranus or Neptune. Yeah. But for us, in terms of humans going out into space, it's pretty far out.
And when you think about all of the fanfare in the old-fashioned, if that's even a term, old-fashioned shuttle launches.
Exactly.
You mentioned plumes of smoke.
Oh, it's incredible.
And how much thrust it took to get that off the ground, but only to go a couple hundred miles?
Yeah, it's incredible to think about how much has to be ejected and how much fuel. I mean, these things weigh a lot. So when they first take off the ground, they go slow. Then they start accelerating. And part of that is they lose mass, and then they can really get going.
Yeah, and in this case, once they're out in orbit on their way to the moon, they're doing, 1,500 miles an hour?
Yeah, and as they come in tomorrow, they'll be at 25,000 miles per hour when they hit the atmosphere. So that's the part we really want to worry about. Hopefully, they come home safely with the heat shield and everything is good. The splashdown in near San Diego in the Pacific, and we can celebrate.
I'm looking forward to it. Dr. Christian Greer, CEO of the Michigan Science Center, thanks for stopping by, helping us learn a little more about Artemis, and congratulations on the planetarium. And as always, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
This is Focus. Paul W. Smith will be back right after this.